This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So, went back and watched the game yesterday. By the way, the All-22 for Washington Carolina is all messed up. I don't know if anybody else is having that issue. I've been having all sorts of issues, Denton, with my NFL.com subscription. And, of course, you can't reach anybody. I'm not even talking about, forget phone. I'm just talking about online. You can't reach anybody to help. Anyway, so I went back and watched all of the Marcus Mariota plays because I didn't give him a grade yesterday like I do with Jaden every week. And not that there was a clamoring for it. I'm not saying that. But I wanted to see if what I thought was close to true, which is that he played at a very high level. It was actually better than I thought it was. You know, after starting the game 0 for 3, Mariota hit 15 of his next 16. At one point, he completed 11 passes in a row. They scored on 6 straight drives with Mariota. That's pretty damn impressive, regardless of the opponent, regardless of, you know, missing 3 times in the red zone. So, I want to get this out of the way, that the caveat to all of this is twofold. One, the Panthers are bad defensively, really bad. With that said, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to take advantage of it to the tune of 40-7, or in his case, really ultimately 30-7. He came in with the score at 10-0 already. And I would also say the other sort of, you know, obvious caveat is he did come in, they had a 10-0 lead, and it almost felt like at 10-0 there was no chance they could lose the game. That's out of the way. Let me just emphasize this to start with. Marcus Mariota, standalone game. Okay, the caveat's in place. Okay, just looking at Sunday. Not talking about him and his career. Not talking about what he might be able to be. Just what was he on Sunday? He was excellent. He was really good. I'll give you the grade shortly. But there are a couple of things. Number one, this idea, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday on the show, and Denton thought so, and a lot of callers agreed, that he really looked awful early. He didn't look great early, okay? There's no doubt. The first 2 possessions weren't great. But it really wasn't on him, necessarily. The very first snap is a read option keeper. He gains 3 or 4 yards on it. Terry just misses a block. Terry almost doesn't really seem to understand that he's got to block that outside guy that got to Mariota. If he at least just gets in the way, Mariota's probably got an 8, 9, 10-yard run. The sack he took was definitely not his fault. Lucas gets beat quickly and inside immediately. And Mariota, before he even completes his drop back, is under siege. Then you get, you know, a false start, and maybe that's some of the timing and cadence with the new quarterback. And then the first third down is a 3rd and 15. But by the way, it doesn't matter who's quarterbacking for this team. As I've been saying since week 2 or week 3, 3rd and 15 is not a draw or a bubble screen play for this team and for Cliff Kingsbury. They're going to pick up the first down. And this would be the biggest, in the, by far and away, the play that I'm sure he would love to have back more than any other. It's 3rd and 15, and he's got De'Ami Brown in sort of this cover 2, you know, opportunity down the field. And he overthrew him, missed him. Missed him badly. First true throw of the season. You know, 3rd and 15, not ideal. He'd love to have that one back. The second possession with him in the game, he's got a deep shot to Noah Brown that he takes that is not poorly thrown necessarily. It draws the defensive pass interference. It's a 29-yard play. Move the sticks. There is probably an opportunity on that play to work the other side of the field because, you know, Deami Brown or Noah Brown is lined up in 3 versus 4. You know, you've got 4 in coverage, 3 split out. Usually that is a we're going to work the other side of the field moment for the quarterback. He didn't. He stuck with the 3-on-4, and he threw a ball that was, you know, not poorly thrown, and it drew the DPI. But if he had worked the other side of the field, Ben Sinnott, number 82, is probably wide open, and I bet that's probably something that they went back and said, look, on your second drive, even though we got a big play out of this with the flag, shouldn't work that side. You got to work the other side. And that was really the Brian Robinson drive that ends in a touchdown. And then the third drive is where he starts to, you know, get going. He's got a 9-yard quarterback draw, you know, a true QB design draw for 9 yards. And then on 2nd and 11, he hits Ertz, and Ertz dropped the ball. And then on 3rd and 11, he throws to Deami Brown. It's not a great throw, but it's good enough. He was open, and it's a catchable ball. I wouldn't put that on Deami Brown as a drop. There's a drop that came in the second half by Zacchaeus. But, you know, it wasn't the best of throws. I still think that the first throw that he missed to Deami Brown was his big miss. But then he starts to heat up. I mean, heat up. Again, Panthers, okay. Still, after starting 0-for-3, all right, he goes on that drive at the end of the first half. He goes 5-for-6, 75 yards, touchdown. They ran another QB draw early in that drive from their own 8-yard line. They got a neutral zone infraction on 3rd down to give him a first down. And then he goes to Terry for 17 yards, good throw. He goes to Terry on one of the best throws he made all day. Under pressure versus the blitz, steps up. By the way, the O-line does a good job in handling the blitz, keeping the pocket, you know, not clean, but available. He steps up and throws an absolute dime to Terry. All right, big play there. And then comes the best, if that wasn't the best throw of that drive, and there were plenty of other good throws to come, then comes the 23-yarder to Deami Brown. All right, he throws to Deami Brown. This was, you know, all part of the 92-yard end of first half drive. This was his 3rd drive in the game. All right, this is his 4th drive in the game. And after he hits Terry for 18, Terry for 15. He goes on 2nd and 10 on a perfect strike to Deami Brown for 23 yards. The next play with the clock rolling, and I'll get to that in a moment, he gets flushed, under pressure, on the move, throws an absolute dime perfectly into the end zone to Zach Ertz. It's 27-0. 5-for-6, 75 yards, touchdown in the final 2 minutes of the first half. Brilliant. Started 0-for-3, finished the first half, 5-for-9, 75 yards. And then in the second half, he's virtually unstoppable throwing the football. He's 13-for-14 for 130 yards and a touchdown. And the one incompletion is a flat-out drop by Zacchaeus on the sideline. Perfect throw, moved the chains, Zacchaeus dropped the ball. You know, bobbled it as he was going out of bounds. If not, he would have been 14-for-14 for a $1.46. You can't play the position any better. Some of the throws were from the pocket and rhythm. Some of them were off schedule. He's excellent off platform. That's where he's always been good. You know, Quinn was asked about that. And Denton, I'll give you the soundbite number here in a moment. We'll play it. But that's where he's very good athletically. He's very good with feel and creating time and then throwing the football. What he's not great at, even though he was great at it on Sunday, over the course of his career, he's never been great at, He's just got to sit back. We're in the drop back game. We need him to deliver over and over again in drop back game. That's not what he's great at. He doesn't have the greatest arm. He doesn't have the most accurate or consistent arm. But man, as an athlete, off schedule, as a quarterback in a dual threat attack, he's always been good doing that. And on Sunday, he just happened to have been outstanding. Again, in the second half, throw after throw, beautiful, on target, yards after catch, 13 of 14. And really, again, the one drop, or he would have been 14 for 14. He was an absolute A in the game. You know, Denton, you gave me his PFF grade yesterday. It was like 85 point something. That is an A strong A performance based on PFF. His QBR in the game was very good. It wasn't, you know, A-plus level. It was probably more like B-plus level at 64.8. His passer rating was 132.8. He was really good in the game. He had 11 rushes for 34 yards. Two of them were kneel down, so it was really 9 for 36. He chose to run when it made sense. Some of the zone read keepers, I think there may have been a decision there that wasn't the best. But overall, against a bad defense, keep saying it, just so that everybody understands that I'm not, you know, ready to anoint him the starter, because I'm not. But if we're just analyzing, reviewing, recapping, and grading one game, and he basically played the whole game other than the opening drive, he was an A quarterback in that game. He was. Maybe six or seven other guys would have come in and done the same thing. You know, he's the perfect complement as a backup quarterback stylistically. They just don't have to change much at all. Really, really liked what he did. And I'm happy for him because he has been a bit maligned. Most people did not think that this was the best, you know, signing in the offseason. But I think to me, it's even more an indication that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn have this aligned vision. They have what they believe to be, you know, a shared vision of the culture. And they knew clearly right from the jump who they were taking in the draft, because Mariota's stylistically a perfect backup for Jaden Daniels. No, he's not Jaden Daniels. He's not. He doesn't throw the ball as well. There are subtle differences, but the big difference, the most obvious, is he just doesn't throw the ball at the same level that Jaden does. Jaden is high level as a thrower of the football in the NFL, from the pocket and outside of it. But if they got to play a game or two with Marcus Mariota in this system, it's perfect for him. He needs the support of a running game, always has. He needs the support probably of a better defensive effort. You don't want to put him out there if you're down 14 in the third quarter and say, hey, we got to throw the football to come back. Probably not the best scenario for him. But, you know, everything clicking, running game, he's part of it. Play action game. Boot game, off schedule for him, which is really, really something he does well. I mean, he may not have a game in his career where he was this accurate. Seriously. I pointed out the one game against the 49ers when he started for the Falcons in 2022. He was 13 of 14 for a buck 29 and two touchdowns, no picks. And they ran the ball, and he ran the ball for 50-plus yards and a touchdown. That's his kind of game, no doubt. But he was on target all day, which is why I'm sure PFF gave him that incredibly high grade. He deserved it. He was really outstanding. And even finding his, you know, sea legs early on, it wasn't all about him. There were some just whiffed blocks on plays, although he'd love to have the one throw to De'Ami Brown back on that first opportunity on third and 15, because De'Ami was open and he just missed him. By the way, Jaden's missed some balls this year. So if we got to play with him Sunday, it's a different opponent. It's a different defense. But they don't have to change what they do. They may not run it as high a level, more likely than not. They won't have the explosiveness at the position. And they won't be in a position where if they need to throw the football, they'll be in the best shape. There's a massive difference between Daniels and Mariota, but that doesn't change the fact that Mariota was an A quarterback on Sunday against Carolina. So the one thing that I would have added that I didn't yesterday to the list of things that I didn't love, and it's 2 weeks running now. It's you know, not the biggest nit to pick, but it's a nit to pick. End of the first half last week against Baltimore, remember, Washington went to the locker room with one timeout in their pocket that they didn't call. And I said they should have called it on defense, and if they weren't going to call it on defense, they should have called it when Jaden threw to Noah Brown, and he didn't get out of bounds, but it looked like he got out of bounds. They should have called it there. Well, yesterday at the end of the first half, on the play before the touchdown pass to Ertz with 10 seconds to go, Mariota threw an absolute strike to Diami Brown on second and 10 for 23 yards. The play ends at 30 seconds. They take their next snap at 16, and the next play, which was a touchdown, ended with 10 seconds. They should have banged the timeout with 30 seconds to go. Because, now, they may say, and I'm open to this, they may say, actually, we really felt like we had them on their heels. We liked the defensive personnel they had out there. They were gassed. We felt like we needed to go. That's fine. But if you throw that next ball incomplete, then you're going to have just one more snap to throw to the end zone before you got to kick the field goal. Whereas if you had banged the timeout with 30 seconds to go, more likely than not, depending on how the play is played out, you would have had three shots to the end zone instead of two from the Carolina 11-yard line or 12-yard line. So you lost a play potential by not calling the timeout with 30 seconds to go. That's all. Other than that, really impressive. Really impressive performance against Carolina. Bad team, but so what? They did to a bad team what they've done to some bad teams this year. They've pummeled them. Good for them. Up next, a quick Denton college football recap. We never had a chance to get to it yesterday. And we'll do that. The Georgia-Texas game, insane. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right, we do college football recap on Tuesdays, especially when the Skins play on a Sunday. Denton does the college football recap show for Sirius XM on Friday night and Saturday night. This was a huge Saturday because we had the Alabama-Tennessee afternoon, followed by the big one, Texas and Georgia at night. I'm assuming that's where you will start.
Yeah, we're going to start Texas and Georgia, and obviously there's a couple of different directions we could go with the game. We could talk about the temper tantrum that the fans threw, and we will get there, Kevin.
We have to.
We have to. That. But I thought the game itself was a really interesting depiction on how we were kind of fooled. I say we. I was definitely fooled because I was of the assumption that Texas was the best team in college football and that Quinn Ewers was the best quarterback in college football. And what we saw was the opposite. Now, Carson Beck didn't play great for Georgia on the other side, although I do think a drive after the temper tantrum was incredibly impressive from him. But Georgia's a completely different animal when they have the ability to establish the run game, which they did not have against Alabama because they got down so quickly. But I was really impressed with the way the Bulldogs played. And look, if you don't have a quarterback that can run against Georgia and you allow them just to let the pass rushers go loose, you're in a lot of trouble because they have so many dudes on that defensive line. Jalen Walker, Michael Williams, who was unleashed for the first time. I mean, those two guys combined for 5 sacks.
Walker was amazing.
They got some dudes on the defensive line. It was really impressive to watch Kirby Smart and that defensive staff completely stifle the best play caller in college football in Steve Sarkisian.
With, by the way, an excellent offensive line, we thought.
Right.
So I think the first half of that game, I mean, at one point, like 6 drives of offense, they had like 38 total yards of offense. Like, it was an absolute
throttling. That was the entire half.
I'm sorry?
That was the entire half. They had like 38 yards for the entire half.
It was an unbelievable number for a team so explosive. Georgia's defense was just overwhelming. I mean, it was oppressive. Like, Texas had no shot to move the football. And Georgia built a 23-0 lead. And that was with multiple turnovers in the first half. You know, Beck threw 2 interceptions in the first half, and then he ended up throwing another one, which we'll get to in the second half. But it was such a beatdown. I thought it was stunning to watch. I'm with you. I did not expect that. You know, not Alabama was up 28-0 on Georgia. Texas could not make forward progress doing anything. Like, it just was beating ahead their heads against the wall. It was such a defensive mismatch for what we thought it wouldn't be. So, to your point, Kirby Smart, what they did defensively, ended up being, to me, the story of the game. I mean, Texas got beat 30-15. They did get back into the game. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the Georgia defense, Denton, was the story of the game. Texas was 2-for-15 on third down, 1-for-5 on fourth down. They were 3-for-20 on the 2 most important downs in football. They only ended up with 259 yards. This was a team averaging over 500, I think. Really impressive, Georgia's defense. Really impressive. By the way, I thought Arch actually looked better when he was in there than Ewers. And I'm a Quinn Ewers fan. But I thought Arch looked a little bit more comfortable and a little less rattled in the drive that he was in the game on, 2 drives that he was in the game on.
I thought he looked fine. Quinn in the second half looked way better. But it is alarming that you had to sit your guy to kind of settle him down when it was a home game. Like, I feel like there's some sort of leeway if you're going into Georgia, although admittedly Athens isn't like, it's not like Baton Rouge at night, right? It's not the most hostile of hostile environments, but it's still a tough place to play.
It was as good as it gets.
But this was at home, and you had these sorts of issues. And then the at-home
element.
It was
as good as Austin gets, is what I'm saying.
Yes, definitely.
It is a wine-and-cheese kind of a fan base and crowd, but that place was electric Saturday night.
It was jumping, but it is that fan base that then kind of took over the game, at least the headlines, because of the temper tantrum they threw.
So get to that. Set it up so that everybody understands what happened.
So this was late, not late, but it was early, I guess, in the second half. Georgia's driving down the field. They throw an interception where the Texas player takes it back to about the 9-yard line. He's celebrating. Everyone's celebrating. Texas had just scored a touchdown. So you're thinking, all right, there might be a little bit of momentum here to potentially make this a ball game. I mean, Texas was down 23-0 at half. It was the first time since Notre Dame that a number one overall team had been down 23-0. That game that Notre Dame was down was that BCS National Championship where Manti Te'o, we didn't know if his girlfriend was real or not. So it was not a fun fraternity to be in, not a fun graphic to be a part of. But they pick off Carson Beck, which is his third interception of the game, and the officials throw a flag for a pass interference. You see the replay on television at the same time they see it on the board in Austin, and it's very clearly, at the absolute worst, an offensive pass interference, but in reality, it's a no-call. It's just guys fighting for a position. Defender was not the one interfering with the play, and the fans went ballistic in Austin to the point where they're raining bottles, water bottles, Gatorade bottles, beer bottles, cans, what have you. You know, our guy Stanford Steve nearly was getting hit. He was on that sideline. He was nearly getting hit by some of these bottles. Sark had to come over and wave and ask these students to stop. And then the refs are gathering after this show of retaliation, whatever you want to call it, after this show of immaturity. The refs gather at the middle of the field, and I'm at home thinking they're about to call a penalty on the fans. This is going to go from bad to worse. I thought they were going to penalize the fans, which they should have. They had a right to do. If you're delaying a game for the mountains of bottles that are thrown on the field, you're justified in calling a penalty on the fans. And instead, they flip the pass interference. So there's no penalty on the fans. They flip the pass interference. Then ultimately, Texas goes down and scores. So it was 23-0 to now 23-15. It's a completely different ballgame.
It's one of the worst precedents of officiating crowd that I can remember. I mean, essentially, the fans got rewarded for being out of order and delaying the game by throwing things onto the field. Whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter. The perception is that the Texas fans delayed the game, threatened the game with their hostility and the throwing of everything you could imagine onto the field. I mean, it took 10 minutes to clear the field of all of the debris, and the referees during that time appeared to have changed their mind, and it appeared to be based on the crowd reaction. That's probably not true, but everybody thinks it's true. So that's a terrible, terrible thing for places like Death Valley and Tuscaloosa and College Station and, you know, the Shoe in Columbus. I mean, those are some rowdy, rowdy fans. On the call, Denton, I think the no call would have been the best. But let me just say this. It was called as pass interference in real time. Bad call, but I've seen much worse calls than that. Like, you know, overturning it after that, I mean, I've seen worse calls missed. There was a little bit of a tug as he was getting bowled back, the defender was, before he intercepted the pass on the offensive player's jersey. I think a no call was the best call. I think pass interference was a bad call, but I've seen much worse interferences get called the wrong way. And that changed the game, and it appeared to change the game based on fan reaction, which is a horrible precedent, one of the worst, you know, potential precedents we've seen. We'll see what happens because of this. The fans, I thought they were going to get flagged. I thought they were going to get warned by Sarkisian, who walked down there and said, stop, stop, stop. But then I thought, no, they're continuing it. They're going to get flagged. And it turned it into a game. But you know what happened? Georgia responded with a huge drive. That 3rd and 10, when it was 23-15 and the place was going nuts and they were backed up. Where were they? Like inside their 10-yard line maybe?
Yeah, they were backed up against their end zone. I thought it was the best drive of Carson Beck's career.
Unbelievable throw in that 3rd and 10 to hang in there and make that throw to what's-his-face?
To Arian Smith.
Smith for 21 yards. Next play was another big play, and all of a sudden they're in the red zone, and they ended up scoring. It's 30-15. It's the fourth quarter. You know, it's not over, down two scores, but it really was a great answer to that controversy, for sure.
All right, we're short on time, so that's all we got for this week. But that was the biggest storyline.
I'm really happy for the Terps beating USC. It was a comedy of errors leading up to their comeback. They were down 28-14. typical stuff, penalty on a field goal that was no good, and then the next thing you know, USC's in the end zone, penalty on a punt that, you know, kept a drive alive. They're down 21-7. But then Maryland's got talent, Denton. They do have talent on their team. They've got speed. They've got playmaking ability. And they made some plays, and they beat a USC team. Just real quickly, USC has four losses on the year, Denton. All four of those games were totally winnable games, right? They lost to Michigan by three. They lost to Minnesota in a game that they could have won. Lost to Penn State in overtime. Lost to Maryland by a point. I'm glad the Terps won. It really now gives them a chance to get to six, which would make them bowl eligible for a fourth straight year. It was really a crucial, crucial game for this season. Although, you know, they're still 1-3 in the Big Ten. But good win, good, you know, good job by everybody out there to be resilient and to come back. All right, Mike Sando next. With the weather changing, October is a critical time to check your home's windows. If yours are cracked or leaking, won't stay open, it's time to call the pros at Window Nation. Right now, for every two windows you purchase, you'll get two windows free with no limit. You'll save a bunch. Plus, no money down, no payments, and no interest for 24 months. By the time you pay for these windows, the year will be 2026, and you'll be paying half price. Window Nation's windows come with a lifetime warranty. They can be installed in a day or less. With proven quality and service, it's no wonder thousands of homeowners have trusted Window Nation for their homes, and you can too. So if your old finicky windows and high energy costs from this winter are cutting deep into your finances, don't miss out. An unlimited buy two, get two free, no money down, no interest, no payments. For 2 years, you can't afford to wait. It's easy. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free, no obligation estimate. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Mike Sando. Mike's been covering the NFL for years. He does it currently for The Athletic. You can follow him on X on Twitter at SandoNFL. You've written a couple of really good stories just in the last couple of days that I want to get to, but let's start with the team here. Where, you know, assuming Jaden will be healthy sooner rather than later, whether it's this week or next, where do you have Washington right now in the NFC overall?
Probably as a, you know, a playoff team that, that's interesting to ask that. I need to look at the whole NFC, but I mean, who are you going to put? San Francisco's on the ropes. I mean, you got to have questions about them. I think the teams I would put over them in the NFC would be Detroit, Minnesota, probably Green Bay. So you're really, you know, maybe the fourth or fifth best team in the NFC, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, Detroit and Green Bay. We did this yesterday. Detroit and Green Bay, yeah, to me, look like right now, you know, based on the 49ers' health situation, the two best teams in the NFC. I mean, it's, yeah, we got 10 weeks left. Things change, but
season,
as it stands now.
Yeah, the stuff's going to reveal itself over the course of the season. You don't just come off everything right away. But I think San Francisco is still a good team, but they're just reaching a little bit of a breaking point with injuries. So if McCaffrey comes back for them, I think they can stabilize a little bit. But if he's not going to play, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be a little bit up and down, which I think we've seen. And maybe trending a little bit down right now. They just played Kansas City. But, you know, after this week, what if Chicago beats Washington by 10 points, right? Then they're 5-2, and I'm going to be on a radio show in Chicago saying, where do you put Chicago in the NFC? And I'll say, well, they just beat Washington, right? So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think they're definitely better than what was expected. They may be better than even they expected, right? You don't know how it's all going to come together. But I think you have a team that's playing with belief and playing with energy, and you can see that in all three phases of the game. And I think even though it was against Carolina, I think it was really encouraging that it looked really good when Marcus Mariota came in. I thought that was, you know, he had his – I just – coming onto this thing, this show, I was looking – he had the third best No, the second best statistical day of his career in that game, if you go, I think it was EPA per pass play, when he at least threw more than one pass in the game. So that was very encouraging to me. For them, it shows that, you know, maybe they have a really good system, too, which we know. But we're giving Jaden Daniels a lot of credit, deservedly. But that was nice, I think, to come in and have it almost be just as good.
I had a bunch of numbers for him. I didn't have that one, but he was, Mike, excellent on Sunday, albeit against a very bad defensive football team. But you're right. I mean, in the moment, it felt like one of Marcus Mariota's best games. Let's stick in the NFC East. You wrote, or the headline is, Jerry Jones is no Al Davis, and that's a good thing. Okay, he isn't that, but where are the Cowboys as an organization right now, both sort of immediate future and then moving forward beyond that?
Well, I think they're defined by the fact that there's uncertainty with their coach and they didn't re-sign Mike McCarthy. And that kind of paints everything. I feel like the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, he's in a pretty good situation in one spot because they've done a decent job getting talent, but he's in a difficult position ultimately, because the owner is really the coach of the team, Jerry Jones. The whole locker room knows that's the guy. And now you're imperiled a little bit more by this idea that, hey, everyone else has contracts except for you. So that's where I think they are now. Probably, you know, a good chance of, you know, that they're not, they're obviously not as good on defense this year. Their defense has probably peaked when Dan Quinn was there. Dan probably got out at a good time. And they're not going to be able to meet expectations this year. My point on Jerry Jones was just, I could sit here and write, 1,000 words a week on what his shortcomings are as an owner. What I was just struck by is this guy's 82 years old and no one talks about it. And so my comparison was, you know, when Al Davis owned the Raiders, and I compare those two because they're both GMs as owners, guys who are involved and having the final say, and they're active and they're the face of the team. Everyone knows they have the juice in the organization. Al Davis from age 73 to 82 was terrible. He was 50-some games under 500. Jerry over that period is 33 games over. In fact, coming into this year, they had the second-best record in the league over the last 3 years. So I think he's always measured against the fact that he can't top what Jimmy Johnson did when he was there, and that's fair. But, they've been a competitive team in the mix, just probably a little bit limited by his ownership style and having to comment on everything all the time and being such a marketer. I think it does end up kind of hurting their ceiling in the end.
Yeah, I think you just answered my next question. I mean, I was going to say, no one knows dysfunctional organizations like we do here in D.C. We lived with it for a quarter century, and it destroyed, you know, two-thirds of a passionate fan base. The Cowboys fan base is far different, and it's far more national and international. But can they ever win big with him?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it to me. I think they'll be an interesting team. Jerry bought the team in 1989, a long time ago. He's obviously not going to own it and operate it forever. So whenever that time comes, he feels he's too old, or if there's passes away at some point, that will be an interesting dynamic in terms of how they change. What, how will they be different? But for now, we know this. I don't know if Jerry Jones would give up the spotlight for an extra 3 wins a year. Like, you know, I think it's so important to him to be the voice and face of the team. It's what he gets out of owning the team. It's really what he enjoys about owning the team. And so,
Al Davis enjoyed. Al Davis enjoyed the competitive fight, kind of a rebel. And I think, you know, before he became older and not well, I thought he, you know, in terms of an owner general manager, was the keenest evaluator of talent, especially for a few decades before he got old.
And no doubt. Well, he was coach of the team. He was a great football guy. But I do also think that as he went along, And before I was covering the league, I was a Raiders season ticket holder, 95, 6, 7. So I followed them all through the 80s, you know, even a little bit before that. So I'm very familiar with their arc. And I think they were always going to be 100% dependent on Al. As when Al was in his peak and prime, they were unbelievable. But as he declined, they declined. And there was nothing that could help him. And he held on to old ways of we're going to win with the vertical passing game and we're going to have the fastest wide receivers who are just track guys. And that stuff ended up being dragging him down. I think Jerry Jones has done a better job of creating a structure there with his son Steven, with Will McClay, with some other people who can actually say to him, no, Jerry, let's not do this. Hey, let's be prudent here. And then I think Jerry's also enough of a businessman and about the money that leads to some restraint in some personnel moves too. People complaining about, hey, why didn't you buy this, you know, sign this guy in the off season? So there's been a little bit of a more of a measured approach where Jerry Jones's whims aren't on display as much as they were with Al Davis, who would fire a coach this year, fire a coach next year, act impulsively, right?
Right.
So that's why I think there's been more stability for the Cowboys longer.
Talking to Mike Sando from The Athletic, you mentioned the 49ers and you wrote about the 49ers and their shrinking window. So what's going to happen here this year? I mean, will they get McCaffrey back? Will they – Ayuk's done. And what does this mean for Brock Purdy in a big deal when the season ends if they don't have a good year?
Yeah. I think they will get McCaffrey back at some point. It sounds like it could be not this game against Dallas coming up, but maybe after their bye. They have a bye after that. But I think you have to be questioning of how long he can stay on the field if it's a chronic type of an injury with your Achilles tendons, right? That's scary. So they're just a little – I think it's fair to ask, have we seen the best of this iteration of the 49ers with the George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. There's enough question marks around some of those players. By the way, Trent Williams, who's 36 and has been just an unbelievable tackle, but you know, he's kind of year to year. And if they don't have as good of a year this year as Trent Williams coming back, right? I think he's one of those guys who could walk away if it's not a good situation, right? He's made plenty of money and he's a Hall of Famer. So, if he doesn't think he can get a ring, is he going to keep going, right? So some of these pieces could come off around Purdy. They traded a bunch of those draft picks to get Trey Lance. Hey, they got Purdy, so they're okay, but you lose some depth. They're the third oldest roster in the league right now, waited for the playing time and who's on the field. So they'll probably re-sign Purdy. It'll probably be an expensive deal, but, you know, will they be able to support him as well? Like, I would say this. If we drew a line right now where Brock Purdy's production has been, I don't think that line's going to keep going up at the rate it's been going, right? I think it'll be harder for that to happen. And he may be good and he may be fine, but not necessarily able to make up for it if it's not, you know, at least good around him.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that seems like what will be everything's will get manifested into Purdy is a system quarterback potentially. And then I'm curious as to what you think, because you're obviously from the Bay Area. Will any of this fall on Kyle?
Two things there. I think Purdy's a little bit better than system quarterback because he can run and make some stuff happen. So I think he's a little bit better than that, but your point stands. And then your point does stand overall. He's just a little better than that. And then I think with Shanahan, we have to just wonder, what's the cumulative effect of getting so close to the mountaintop, and every time you're about to plant your flag at the top, you slip and fall down and break an arm, right? That's kind of what the cumulative effect is of being so close, and you put so much into it. And after a while, even though you've been so successful, your failures you're defined by your failures almost, isn't that? It's like the goalposts move as you have more success, right? You become a Purdy becomes a good quarterback, now we're going to measure him against Mahomes, right? Shanahan's a good coach, now we're going to measure him against Reed. Yeah. And I think the weight of that organizationally is hard after a certain amount of time. So I would assume, I think he's a football lifer. I think he wants to do this for a long time. I think he's good. I think he's going to be there a long time, but, you know, if he were to be let go or something, I think he'd be hired in 1 minute.
100%. And how many franchises would pay for, you know, multiple Super Bowl trips and on the verge of two others when they lost to the Rams, you know, at the end and lost all the quarterbacks in Philadelphia?
It's an emotional weight thing. To me, it's an emotional weight thing. Would there ever come a time, like think of Andy Reid, great coach with the Eagles, but I think they all agreed after about 10 years, it was just time to take a breath.
Run its course.
No one was saying he was a bad coach or whatever. Just everybody wanted a new kind of beginning. Yeah. So that can happen with anybody, you know, anyone. So that could happen with Kyle.
I got a minute left. Tell me what you think right now about Lamar Jackson and how much of a favorite he appears to be to win a third MVP.
Oh, no doubt. So last year he kind of won it by default. It wasn't even his best year. You know, it wasn't even close to what he did before. And we had a hard time picking an MVP last year. This year, super impressive. He's been on hot streaks before, but I think this one, what's great about this one is after the first game, I felt like that first game against Kansas City showed the limitations of what was around Lamar. Mark Andrews didn't look good, but that hasn't been the case. So you got to tip your hat to him and them. I think he's hit some real good deep ball accuracy this year. So Derrick Henry's a nice add. I think he's got to be at the top.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mike Sando, everybody, from The Athletic. Thanks to him. Thanks to Merrill Hodge, who was excellent. He was on the show earlier. That's it for the day. Doc is in with Linnell or Chris?
With the Rooster.
With the Rooster. Doc in the house. Next. Back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.